Welcome to InVision Radio with Will Bowen. Take some time to let your mind unwind. Now, here's Will.
Thank you very much, Dan Murphy. Hey, Dan, stick around. I'm going to want to talk to you a little bit more in a bit. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of InVision Radio. I'm Will Bowen, and I'm glad to have you here. I want to clear up something that is a bit of a misrepresentation of the facts that's on the internet. A while back, somebody gave me a wonderful prosperity affirmation. Now, an affirmation is something that you simply say to affirm for yourself the truth that you want to live. And so people will affirm health, they'll affirm wealth, they'll affirm having a relationship, whatever, they are affirming what it is they would like. Someone presented me with this affirmation, and I absolutely loved it. And it has meant a lot to me. It's long, I'll tell you that. It's very long. But if you'll email me, will@willbowen.com, and just put affirmation in the subject line, will@willbowen.com, put affirmation in the subject line, I will email you this back. During a bit of a challenging time for me financially, someone gave me this, and I began to read it every night, every single night, and I still do. I want you to know that I still do, and in fact, I have recorded it with my own voice, and I play it for myself sometimes as I'm going to sleep. So what I'm trying to clear up on the internet is that I posted this one time as a blog post, and someone then began to float it around the internet and giving me credit for this. I did not write this. I do think it's fantastic, though. So with much gratitude to whoever put these words in this order, here is the powerful prosperity affirmation. If you're able to right now, close your eyes and think about yourself when I use the word I. Here we go. I am the source of all wealth. I am rich with creative ideas. My mind abounds with new, original, inspired thoughts. What I have to offer is unique, and the world desires it. My value is beyond reckoning. What the world needs and desires, I am ready to produce and give. What the world needs and desires, I recognize and fulfill. The bounty of my mind is without hindrance or limit. Nothing can stand in the way of my inspired creativeness. The overflowing power of God life energy overcomes every obstacle and pours out into the world, blessing and prospering everyone and everything through me. I radiate blessings. I radiate creativity. I radiate prosperity. I radiate loving service. I radiate joy, beauty, peace, wisdom, and power. Humanity seeks me and rewards me. I am beloved of the world. I am wanted wherever I go. I am appreciated. What I have to offer is greatly desired. What I have to offer brings a rich reward. Through my vision, the world is blessed. Through my clear thinking and steadfast purpose, wonderful new values come into expression. My vision is as the vision of the mighty ones. My faith is as the faith of the undefeatable. My power to accomplish is unlimited. I, in my uttermost God source, am all wealth, all power, all productivity. I hereby declare my financial freedom now and henceforth forever. Wow. Powerful words, powerfully written. Great visuals in your mind as you read that. There's nothing more important than what we tell ourselves. Nothing. We live out what we tell ourselves. We tell ourselves life is this particular way and life is that way. We tell ourselves relationships are that way. We think it's the other way around. We think that we're just offering commentary on life. The thing is that what we are saying about life, life then reflects back to us. I want to share with you an amazing story, and I want to introduce the person to you in just a few moments. And this is a person who refused to define himself as incapable or as limited or as, in his particular case, disabled. This is from my new book, Happy Stories. And this is a chapter titled, A Vision of Happiness. Let me share this story with you. The subhead is, A Blind Boy Defies the Odds to Become a Radio Celebrity. The quote at the beginning of the chapter is from Helen Keller. We differ, blind and seeing, one from another, not in our senses, but in the use we make of them, in the imagination and courage with which we seek wisdom beyond the senses. Now you just close your eyes, hon. We're gonna give you some gas, just like at the filling station. The nurse sang to Dan in a lilting southern drawl. Young as he was, Dan could have repeated the words along with her, drawl included, but he knew that would be rude. As the nurse placed the rubber anesthesia cup over Dan's small face for yet another operation on his right eye, Dan knew what was to follow. He closed his eyes. His mind registered only a slight difference between his eyes being open or shut. A wavy feeling passed through him, and then Dan was asleep. It was 1960, and Dan was in an operating room in Key West, Florida. This would be the fifth operation on Dan's right eye in his brief 5 years of life. Dan was born with congenital cataracts in both eyes and glaucoma in his right. The glaucoma was spreading to Dan's left eye, so doctors were now removing his right eye. Henceforth, he would wear a prosthetic right eye. Dan's vision problems can be traced back to his mother contracting German measles during her third month of pregnancy with Dan. Often, infants born under such conditions are blind and deaf and can also be severely mentally handicapped. Fortunately, Dan's challenges begin and end with his sight. The doctors estimated that Dan could see only about 10% of what most children see. His vision would probably never get better. But if he was careful, Dan could maintain the modicum of sight he possessed. Had young Dan been completely blind, he might have adapted better socially. Instead, he was trapped in a world between sight and darkness. The darkness was nearly complete, and the sliver of light taunted him to be more like other kids. Dan longed to do things most boys his age took for granted, especially to play baseball like his brother John. John could see the sadness in Dan's face as he stood beneath the shade of a sprawling water oak, his head moving slowly from side to side as if trying to catch a perfect angle that would complete his vision. Hey, Dan, John called, walking away from the game. Come, umpire. The other boys groaned irritably at John's invitation, but he silenced them with a glare. Dan's heart leapt. He ambled as quickly as he dared toward his brother's voice, always careful to avoid cypress knees and errant bits of debris that might cause him to fall. John guided his brother behind the catcher, whose round body would offer some protection. For the next hour and a half, the game proceeded, with Dan standing in the moist Florida heat, calling balls and strikes, most of which the other boys ignored due to inaccuracy. Whether standing impotently behind home plate or trying to relate to kids at school, Dan's unique presence caused some to feel uncomfortable, and many found it easier to discount him. As he grew older, he withdrew into himself. He rarely spoke to others unless they initiated the interaction. Dan soon became accustomed to receding into the background in most social situations. Dan rarely spoke, and when he did, it was painfully awkward because he had a stammer. His words would stream through his mind as clearly as the scrolling lights along buildings in Times Square. Unfortunately, they flew too fast for Dan's mouth, which would find itself still forming the beginning of soft consonants long after other people had picked up the conversation to spare Dan embarrassment. Dan was almost totally blind, and to those who didn't know him, he sounded as if he were mentally retarded. Dan's doctors recommended that he be placed into a home for the blind. There, he would at least learn a skill such as stuffing envelopes that he could do for the rest of his life. To their credit, Dan's parents refused to send him to a home. They did their best to find ways for Dan to fit in with the other kids in school, including retyping his reading assignments for him using a large print typewriter. With few friends and limitations on the activities he might pursue, Dan listened to the radio constantly. Deep in the recesses of his mind, a dream began to develop. Dan began to think about the men and women who worked at the radio station. They always seemed to be having so much fun. Being a disc jockey would be a great job to have someday. Then, as if feeling sheepish for daring to dream so big, Dan said aloud, "Yeah, good luck." Dan didn't know what the inside of a radio station looked like. For that matter, he barely knew what the inside of his home looked like. But after he turned off his radio late at night, he imagined himself there. Actually there, at a real radio station. Wouldn't that be something? He thought to himself. In his solitude, Dan not only listened to the great radio announcers of the day, but he began to mimic them as well. As a young teen, Dan would cup his right hand over his ear to better capture the sound of his voice, and then repeat the weather forecast, report sports scores, and pretend to interview celebrities. Then Dan made an interesting discovery. If he could get people to laugh, he could get over their uncomfortableness with him and get their attention and approval in a non-threatening way. Dan went from class outcast to class clown. Dan finished high school and went to college, where he nearly failed his freshman year because he was always at the campus radio station. He learned to read copy by wearing both contacts and thick glasses, and then sliding the printed paper up his left cheek as he read, the text only millimeters from his eye. And yet, with all the machinations it took for Dan to read on the radio, he managed to sound ad-libbed, genial, and often very funny. Today, blind boy Dan, stammering, uncertain Dan, whose destiny seemed to be life in a sweatshop for the blind, is the program director, operations manager, and primary voice talent for KIXI in Seattle, Washington, the 14th largest market in the United States. Dan is happily married, and he and his bride June have seen the world together. Dan has done things many fully sighted people only dream of doing, including rafting in the Grand Canyon, hiking through the Amazon rainforest, and exploring the Great Pyramid of Giza. According to him and those who know him, Dan is a very happy guy. And in addition to his other credits, Dan Murphy is the voice talent for this radio show. In just a few moments, you're going to be meeting Dan Murphy, and we're going to be interviewing him and finding out his three tips for happiness. If you enjoyed the reading that I just did, you can download the entire book, Happy Stories, me reading all 50 stories. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at iTunes. In just a few moments, Dan Murphy. But coming up later, or I should say, and coming up later, in the Namaste Lounge, a truly amazing gentleman, also who happens to be from the Northwest, and he is a writer, a singer, and a powerful performer. His music is very transformative. Stephen Mitchell coming up in the Namaste Lounge. Thanks for being here. Hang around. Lots of fun to come.
International Health Partners has completed three major projects in Tanzania. Now our project is to build the first pediatric hospital there. 18 million children in Tanzania under age 14 have no pediatric hospital to serve them. At Zinga, on the coast north of Dar es Salaam, we have begun by starting the outpatient unit. We invite you to help. Visit our website, ihptz.org. Find out who we are and what we do, and contribute by clicking on Just Give, or call 480-540-9317 and make a credit card donation. Your money will help build the first pediatric facility, and care for children under 5 years old will be free. You'll receive information on how each dollar was spent, pictures of what's going on at the facility, and we do not sell our donors' names and addresses to anyone. So go online now to ihptz.org. It's an act of love and caring, and it will help to change the world, one child at a time.
Bumble and the Stingers, Martha Hooper, Rachel Singers, Lonnie Mack, Twang and Eddie, Hisman, Ring, we're going steady, take it easy, take me high, lie, lie, house of fire, locomotion, poker, passion, deeper purple satisfaction, baby, baby, got it, gimme, getting hot, Sammy's cooking, Leslie Gore, Richie Valens, end of story, Maya Vista, Fujiyama, Kamasutra, Rama, Lama, Richard Perry, Spectre, Barry, Righteous, Archers, Nielsen, Harry, Shimmy, Jimmy, Coco, Poppin', Fats, back and finger poppin'.
Life is a rock.
And live with me right now is Dan Murphy. Hello, Dan Murphy.
Hello, Will. A pleasure to be with you today.
Well, you know, you are with us often. You, in fact, you are the voice for these very programs, and I appreciate you doing that.
Why, thank you.
Let people hear your real voice, Dan.
This is pretty much as real as it gets for me.
I know. Isn't that amazing? So I've always wondered which came first, the desire to be in radio or the voice?
I would have to say the desire to be in radio came first, because even when I was a little kid, about 5 or 6, I would listen to the local rock and roll station, and I just thought they were having the most fun in the world. But at that time, I had an unbelievably bad stammer that stayed with me until my first years in college. As far as projecting and things like that, the desire for radio came in first, and then the voice gradually got better as I got into singing and things like that.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, you know, of course, the focus of the story is twofold, in my opinion. Number one, of course, is the fact that you were born, and you still are, blind, legally, and that you developed a stammer as a result of that. And those are a couple of pretty strong strikes against you for somebody who wants to do what you do for a living. It's a true testament to the fortitude of the human spirit. I really admire that about you.
Well, thanks. It's, you know, looking back, the perspective now is a lot different than it was then, of course. Then it was, you know, gee, what am I going to make of my life? Am I going to be able to do anything at all?
Right.
You know, and then looking back now, it's worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it did, because you had the fortitude, the drive, and the desire to continue on. And also your parents, as we heard in the story, supported you along the way.
I had wonderful parents who gave tirelessly of themselves. They would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning so that they could drive me down to work, because I was doing the morning shift at some place, and, of course, I can't drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go, you know, do their jobs and then pick me up late at night if I was working late at night and things like that. They never hesitated. There was never, no, we can't take you to work. We have stuff to do. We want to sleep in. They were always there for me.
Wow.
And, yeah, that really, really helped.
That's wonderful. What advice would you give to parents who are going through this experience, possibly of discovering that their child might be what we would term differently abled these days?
Well, the nice thing today is there are so many more opportunities for help and assistance than there were when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, right out of the gate, parents today with an alternately enabled or disabled child are going to have more possibilities to get that child mainstreamed and to get that child to be a bigger part of society. But beyond that, as you grow up, as the child grows up, as cruel as this sounds, you got to let them fall every now and then. You can't protect them. You can't umbrella them for their whole life. And as great as my parents were, sometimes they were a little overprotective. And I actually wish now that I'd been able to both figuratively and literally fall down occasionally.
Wow.
So that I would learn the strength that comes with getting back up and starting again.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I was hearing an interview recently on National Public Radio with a woman who took her children around the world and basically got homes in foreign countries and then parented as the parent's parent in those countries.
Wow.
And when she was there, she was in Japan, actually, and there was a race, and her daughter was in the race, and her daughter fell down, and this woman jumped up to go pick her up. And the Japanese women restrained her and told her, no, she will feel much better if you allow her to get up and finish the race.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
That is so true. And on many different levels, too. It doesn't necessarily have to be about physically falling down, but, trying a new skill and, perhaps not succeeding at
mm-hmm.
it, or learning that school is not meant to be easy. It's meant to be tough, and you do have to work a little harder. And especially if you're disabled, you're going to have to sometimes work a lot harder.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't necessarily help if mom and dad come to the rescue all the time.
Mm-hmm. I'm reading Think and Grow Rich once again by Napoleon Hill, and he has a son who was born without ears. And yet he instills in his son at a very young age that you're going to grow up and you're going to be a successful person. And his son does and ends up becoming the vice president of sales for, I think it was, Beltone Hearing Aids. Just amazing what can be done with belief as opposed to people wanting to or unfortunately settling into the expert's opinion that this is as far as that child will go. And as we heard in your story, the experts were saying you were not going to go nearly as far as you have.
Thank goodness my folks didn't listen to them.
Yeah. I'm talking to Dan Murphy, who is, of course, featured in my new book, Happy Stories. And Dan, offline, you were talking about an epiphany you had this morning. Share that with me.
Well, it came to me today that, because you've given me a lot to think about with this whole process of being a part of the book and just the whole thought process of happiness in general and, finding happiness and, trying to be happy and things like that. And it
mm-hmm.
occurred to me that I'm wondering if our default state, what we're starting out with is a state of contentment and happiness, if you will. Because if you look at little babies,
right.
Unless they're eating or crying, they're pretty darn content. They're just hanging out, enjoying the world, and seeing all sorts of new stuff. And they seem pretty content. And then as things go by and we get older and we have distractions or challenges, that tends to get in the way of our natural state of just being content and being happy. And I'm wondering if, as adults, perhaps instead of trying to search and root out that little glimmer of happiness, that little kernel of contentment,
mm-hmm.
maybe we realize it's all around us and all we have to do is swipe the other stuff out of the way, learn to deal with the challenges and the problems, and at least, if not overcome them, at least deal with them, and that will make more room for the natural state of contentment.
I think you have nailed it. I think absolutely that, and that is what I truly believe, that our natural state is contentment, but we get taught to worry and to fret and to have aspirations sometimes that are in conflict with being comfortable with where we are, and so we tend to lose that natural proclivity to be happy. Patch Adams, the real-life doctor portrayed by Robin Williams, says that children laugh on average 400 times a day, whereas adults laugh on average 17 times a day.
Oh, we gotta get that number up there, because I am as silly as it sounds, but laughter is not only the best medicine, but I think it's one of the best vitamins.
Well, actually, it's interesting because you say that your reference, your three points at the end of your story are basically that. You do say to laugh often. Let me read what I write about you. Dan finds that laughter builds bridges between people. Then quoting you, sometimes when people meet me, they feel a little uncomfortable, so I like to give them a big smile and identify the elephant in the room so we can both laugh. I'll say, hey, you may have noticed I have a slight sight problem. After we laugh and they see I'm cool with how I am, they relax. Can you say more about that, Dan?
Well, you know, it's just a question of, you know, people like to be politically correct, and they don't want to offend anybody. And if somebody is a little bit different, whether it's a visual problem, another kind of disability, it doesn't matter. But if someone's a little different, a lot of people are going to say, "I'll just shy away from that. I know they know, but if they don't think I know, maybe it'll be okay for them." You know, and it's like let's just get it all out in the open. And yeah, you know, yeah, I've got this problem, and it looks really weird when I read, but you know what, I can do the job. And yeah. You know, it just puts everybody on an equal footing because, you know, there's probably something in that other person's life that might make them uncomfortable too. So
sure, that's a good point. And when we, Greg Bear, the author of Real Love, says when we identify and talk about who we are, then and only then can people really love us.
Ooh,
so when
you're like
when you're honest with who you are, warts and all, then people can appreciate you. So, and you had said that it's important to you to spend your life enriching other people's lives, and you feel like you do that through your job. Can you talk about that, please?
Well, I'd like to think I'd do it through my job as an announcer, entertainer. You know, I get to make people's lives hopefully a little bit more enjoyable by passing along some fun information or a joke or a funny line or playing some of the music that they enjoy hearing or, you know, just making a slow afternoon commute a little bit less stressful with what I'm doing. So I get to do that every day, but anybody can enrich anybody else's life, and it doesn't have to be going to the end of the earth and working for 5 years in a village, although that's would be a cool thing to do. But you can enrich someone's life in the smallest of ways, you know, from a kind word, or if you've got a couple of extra bucks and every now and then you want to pay it forward at Starbucks or something like that. That brings enormous happiness to me when I'm able to do something for someone else. And it's certainly not about them turning back and saying, thank you so much. It's just knowing that I got to do something fun for somebody else.
Selfless giving.
Yeah.
Which can be done through your job.
It is.
Yeah.
It can be. And
yeah.
So I'm very, very fortunate in that way.
Well, I'm saying not only you, but other people as well.
Oh,
they can do it through their jobs. I mean, we tend to look at our job as, you know, this is something I have to do rather than as an opportunity to touch other people's lives.
Yeah. So anybody who thinks they have a boring job, all the accountants and bookkeepers out there, no, you can enrich anybody's life.
That's true. Hey, listen, tell me about, you were talking also about the importance, and you said you borrowed this from City Slickers, finding your smile, and you found yours at age 16. Tell me about that.
Well, it sort of grew on me as I got a little bit older and started to come out of my shell. I was you know, horribly invisible throughout my school years, so that didn't help. But you know, by the time I was about 16 or 17, I realized that I wanted to do something with music in my life. First, I thought I was going to be a music teacher. But radio had always been a fun part of my life and a part of my life that just really resonated. And by the time I got out of high school and into college, there was a campus radio station there, and I'd already been to a couple of big stations like WNBC in New York, and, you know, just to see what they do with the equipment and the announcers and the microphones and the records, it was...
Do you mind if I slice a hair here and help our listeners who are trying to wrap their heads around the fact that you are blind and you are seeing equipment and everything?
Sure.
Can you explain?
Well, I didn't have any corrective lenses until I was 8, so I really, really don't have a lot of memories, visual memories of my early life. But once I got corrective lenses, and they were Coke bottle lenses, believe me.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to see, you know, the tape machines and, you know, the equipment that you use in a radio station with all the blinking lights and everything. And I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Wow, that's cool. So for you, though, I mean, if I understand, though, with your because you have one prosthetic eye and then you have one other eye, you, from what I understand, have about 10% vision. Is
that correct?
Okay, so you can see, and what, of course, you're way legally blind, but for people who want to try and get a grasp of that, I mean, I would imagine it's almost like closing one eye entirely and then closing another eye 90%. So,
you know, that's probably close to it. I mean, yeah. Having never had full vision, I don't know what you guys have.
Right.
All I know is what I've got.
Yeah.
Basically, what I need to do is when I need to read something, it's got to be about a half inch from my face.
Right.
Which, you know, makes it interesting if you're out in public, you know, speaking to a group of people and, you know, trying to read at the same time. I mean, for years, I would try to pretend, at least to myself, you know, that I wasn't so visually impaired. So if I had to read something in public, I would memorize it so that I thought, oh, well, people won't see me holding the paper close to my face.
Mm.
But, you know, that didn't last all that long. And, you know, sooner or later, I had to realize, look, this is who I am. This is what I've got. You know, this is what I'm playing with, and that's that. And now, a few years down the line, because I'm 58 now, it doesn't matter because everybody wears glasses in my age group, and they all look at the page closely.
You weren't disabled. You were a trendsetter.
There you go.
You were ahead of your time. Okay, well, I have completely, I asked you a question. You were answering the question about finding your smile. And you had said you'd been to WNBC and to the campus radio station. You were talking about that, and I wanted to get a little clarification. Continue with that, would you, about the campus radio station?
Well, I mean, it just clicked. And I think in everybody's life, I hope in everybody's life, there is something that just clicks. And it could be job-related. It could be spiritually related.
Yeah.
For me, it was radio. When I went up there that very first day, I spent 4.5 hours just hanging around there. I flunked a course that first year because I spent too much time at the radio station.
Mm.
But, you know, like they say, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. So I think if you can find something in your life that resonates and that clicks, that's going to be an avenue. That's like a little expressway to get you back to the natural state of contentment. And sometimes there's more than one thing. I love to travel. I never thought I would do any traveling until I met my wife, June. And she loved to travel but never thought she would do anything to satisfy her wanderlust. When we hooked up 20 years ago, it clicked, and, you know, we've been very fortunate enough to do a whole lot of really cool traveling.
That's wonderful.
So,
that is so
you
cool.
Know, yeah, so there's something. There's a passion that we all have, and it doesn't matter what it is, but, you know, once you find it, it's really going to enrich your life and get you back to that state of contentment.
Well, and actually, I mean, if you do that first, if you find your smile, what it is that makes you happy, then you're also going to be enriching people's lives and laughing often.
Yeah, well,
which were your other
absolutely.
Two points. So, I mean, they're all rolled up into one.
They are. And, you know, this isn't to say that happiness is the absence of any problems. I mean, you know, nobody's that lucky. You know, we all have issues. We all have challenges. We all have, you know, bad days and
right.
things in our life that, you know, we're going to have to deal with. But, you know, I think that once you can use your talents to overcome those challenges, life can, you know, be a lot happier.
Now, a lot happier. Dan, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
This has been fun. Dan Murphy, of course, featured in my new book, Happy Stories. And Dan is my friend, and he is also the announcer here for our program. So we'll be hearing more from Dan. Dan.
And Happy Stories is on sale now.
Thank you, Dan. Take care.
Arthur, Janet, Primal, Screaming, Hawker, Jay, and Dale, and Ronnie, Kukla, Fran, and Norman, Oakland, Denver, John, and Osmond, Donnie, JJ, Kayla, ZZ, Top, and LLB, and DD, Dana, David, Bowie, Steely, Dan, and Sing Me Proud, CC, Ryder, Edgar, Winner, Junior, Summers, Isaac, Marcia, Connie, Thunder, Eric, Clapton, Pedal, Wallace, Stephen, Foster, Doo-Dah, Doo-Dah, Good Vibrations, Help Me, Ronda, Surfing Girl, and Little Honda, Tida, Tida, Honey, Honey, Sugar, Sugar, Yummy, Yummy, CBS, and Warner Brothers, RCA, and all the others. Life is a rock, but the radio told me. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
What's the best vitamin for happiness? Find out on page 31. How can you overcome the biggest obstacle to happiness? That's on page 85. What's the fastest route to feeling happier? Check page 124. If you're looking for a manual for happiness, this is it. The book is Happy This Year, The Secret to Getting Happy Once and for All by Will Bowen. In this inspiring and practical book, you'll find proven real-world steps you can incorporate into your life to experience more joy in everything you do. This is the manual for happiness. In fact, the Dale Carnegie Institute of Asia selected Happy This Year as the textbook for classes on how to become a happier person. If you're serious about being happy, get Happy This Year, The Secret to Getting Happy Once and for All by Will Bowen. Available from Grand Harbor Press in hardback, ebook, and audiobook format read by the author. Your destiny is to be happy. Don't wait to be happy someday. Get happy this year.
Darkness closes in, and you can't find your way. The doubts you drag around only seem to say, how can you make it on your own? Remember, you're never alone. Lean into me, I will.
Just heard a little bit of Lean Into Me. It's a wonderful song by my next guest, Stephen Mitchell. Stephen Mitchell is a singer and songwriter who is making the world a better place through his music. Stephen, welcome to the Namaste Lounge.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, Lean Into Me is one of those comforting songs where God is personified as being a physical presence, and it conveys such a feeling of hope and faith. Can you tell me what was going on in your own life when you wrote this song?
Oh, what a great question. I was actually sitting in a service, and they were talking about lean into spirit. And they just said, just lean into that spirit. And I thought, a lot of times I like to write songs that have more than one meaning to them. Mm-hmm. So that could be, okay, I either need to lean into God, or I need to lean into my friend, or I'm telling my friend to lean into me. So that it can work in that spiritual relationship, or it can work as a comforting relationship in terms of friendship or companionship. But I don't know that I was in any particular narrow place in life. In fact, as I recall, I was really happy when I wrote that.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I like about your music is that so much of what people would call new thought or metaphysical music, because God is seen as more of a principle or as a something you connect to in thought through prayer, it's almost people eschew the idea of making God this physical presence that actually holds you, and yet sometimes that's what we really want. Would you agree?
I would agree with that completely, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a wonderful song.
Thank you. It's truly one of my favorites, and I wish I could write songs like that every day. That doesn't happen.
Well, now, let's play a little bit of Freedom of Forgiveness. It's a haunting and powerful song. Let me play a little bit of that, and when we come back, I'll ask you about that.
There's a sweetness in surrender when you see beyond your scars. It's not the things in life that you've been through that make you who you are. There's a freedom in forgiveness when you learn to just let go. Holding on so tight won't change a thing, and changes how we grow.
Stephen Mitchell is my guest here in the Namaste Lounge. That's Freedom of Forgiveness. Now, it's a song about what defines us, the challenges we overcome in the process of forgiving others and ourselves along the way. So Were you personally going through a situation of forgiveness when you wrote this?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Are you like me that you're always going through a process of forgiveness, it seems like?
I think if we're truly having a human experience, I think that's part of the human experience. If we're spiritual beings having a human experience, I really try to balance the spiritual aspect of it with being human. And my partner says great things. He said the things that make relationships work is that your neuroses are complementary. So the song was not written for my partner. He just says, you know, everybody has neuroses. We all have them. We all see the world in a slightly different way. And, boy, I just had to learn to let go of that need to be right or mm-hmm. to be perceived a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I realized that, until I could actually forgive myself for letting people have that kind of power over me to get me so worked up, I could never forgive them. So there was a lot of power. And the song is very simple. It's a very simple melody, mm-hmm. very short. But the message is so deep and powerful. And there are times when I perform that song that I remind myself, oh, of course, that's right. Oh, yeah. So it's more for me than for the listener.
Well, to me, that's the beauty of music and of songs. I've often said that in church, the music is more important than the message, because I don't often leave a church and 3 days later I'm repeating what the minister said, but I am sure playing the songs back and forth in my head. And so this reminder of forgiveness.
One of the things you said to me many years ago, I still remember, and that was, you can say more in 3 minutes than I can say in 45 minutes.
That's exactly
and
right.
I just thought, that is a great quote.
Mm, yeah. Thank you.
The difference is people leave humming the message from the music.
Mm-hmm. It has a hook to hang in their mind.
It's much easier for me because I perform roughly the same songs every Sunday, and you guys have to come up with new stuff every week.
Yeah, that's very true. Yes, we do. Well, you know, it's interesting you brought up this idea of self-forgiveness. Michael Beckwith says that all forgiveness is ultimately self-forgiveness. And I have thought a lot about that because I think in many ways he's very true. In other words, we need to forgive ourselves. We're putting ourselves into a situation, either physically or emotionally, where someone else can, especially if we're adults. I mean, children truly can be victims. But, you know, as adults, we tend to put ourselves in a situation and then we hold resentments against other people for us being there.
Exactly. And in my situation, it was through work. I deal with people who need the help that we provide. Sometimes those people can be very obsessive, and people can Google search my name and they'll find on the web this person that really was devoting his life to discrediting me, discrediting the organization that I worked for. And it was really hard. But then I realized, you know, I'm the one who's actively choosing to be upset by this.
So this was someone that you were working with in your other job, and this was someone who chose to basically protest on the internet in a public forum?
Yes.
Well, that's obviously,
It was 7 years long all the way to the state Supreme Court, and of course I never lost any of the cases, but it just, I only was able to heal from it when I actually realized that I was the one who was letting the drama to matter, because ultimately what is said on the internet is not really affecting my life. It's not affecting my connection. And I cannot, my mantra for last year was, one of the top five ways to make yourself crazy is try to change the behavior of dysfunctional people. And I just insert the word, try to change the behavior of other people.
Of other
Don't
people.
Even try.
Yeah.
And I'm much happier.
Well, and your music certainly reflects that. I mean, reflects that depth of spiritual growth and awareness, and also of a resolution to be happy in this process of forgiveness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for recognizing that.
I loved the cleverness with which you named and actually wrote this next song. Let me play a little bit of this. This is "Drawn to the One Who Drew Me" by Stephen Mitchell.
The master builder took a look at this work of art. Placed on a foundation laid so long ago. And
Stephen Mitchell is my guest. This is a clever and soulful affirmation of our unity with God, I feel, this song, Drawn to the One Who Drew Me. Share how this song reflects your own life.
Wow. That's such a great question on so many levels. First, I just want to say I believe that we are an expression of the divine creator, expressing itself through creativity. Mm-hmm. So the whole concept of that song was, how do I creatively say that, which is really a mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been a fantastic journey realizing that, you know, just because I'm an artist doesn't mean that I'm creative and other people are not. Mm-hmm. Or just because I'm creative and I write music doesn't mean that people who create things like furniture or landscaping are not being creative and expressing that divine creativity through themselves. And so it's this whole journey of learning where that fits in perspective to my life. I am an artist, but I'm also a spiritual being. The fact that I'm a singer doesn't identify who I am or what my value is in the world, or all of those kind of egoic needs that we have as we travel through life and the various experiences that we have. So I feel like I'm running around the question, but...
No. You're answering it very directly, in my opinion. I wanted to ask you, too, then. I mean, this idea of being drawn to the one who drew me, it's almost a two-part process. It's, number one, acknowledging that we are created by something, someone, some sort of divine, universal intelligence, and at the same time, allowing ourselves to develop a relationship with that. I find it so interesting. Some people have very strong beliefs about God, but they tend in some ways not to have a very strong relationship with whoever they perceive that God to be.
Yeah, it seems more like there's a checklist that you have to comply with rather than having an experience that feels so true and real to you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it could be different for every single person. And sometimes the folks who profess to be the most spiritual are the ones who seem the least happy or the least willing to let people have their own spiritual experience.
It's funny you said that. In my book, Happy This Year, I actually cite a study that was done that found that people who are grounded in spirituality and or religion tend to be happier than those who are not. However, if they become extreme in their faith to the point where they are critical of other people, then the more religious you become, you actually become less happy.
And it's interesting too, where you think about when I contemplate history and in the Muslim world was the place for science, mathematics,
right,
advances in medical technologies, and then something shifted and it's becoming more and more fundamental, and now, you know, there's no Nobel Prizes going to the Muslim world, and as people become more and more extreme and more, quote-unquote, fundamental, I become concerned that the focus is less about having that human experience while being a spiritual being.
To me, it comes back to... go ahead, please.
More about, you know, catering to that need to have that extended spiritual existence rather than what's happening right now.
Right. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, said that religion should prove science and science should prove religion.
Amen.
I love that.
Amen.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So tell me something. Who are some musicians who have inspired you, Stephen? Who do you like to listen to?
You know, that is such an interesting question. There's a couple of things that I try to operate by as a musician and a guest artist at spiritual centers and Unity churches and conferences. And that is, one, you should never let the musician speak. And two is, if you have to explain what your song is about, you probably haven't written it well enough.
Okay.
So I'm glad that you've really given me an opportunity to talk about that.
Well, now, I asked you to be on here because I think you write very well, but thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, interesting little self.
I don't try to write every song as if it's a home run and it's going to bring people to their feet, but I do try to write a song where if you actually pay attention to the lyrics, it can be very compelling. In fact, the best compliment I ever got was somebody, and it was the song Drawn to the One Who Drew Me, which, by the way, that recording was the first time that that song was ever performed publicly, and it was in live recording at a concert mm-hmm. that I did at a theater here in Seattle. So just when it's right, it's right. But most of the music that I listen to have no lyrics at all. It's just music.
Interesting.
And it could be, and it's pretty strange, but I do love all of my friends in New Thought Music. Karen Drucker is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's an artist out of Portland, Oregon called Laura Berman. She's incredible and writes just fantastic music. And I love watching the evolution of this music as it becomes more and more mainstream is the wrong word, but I get contacted a lot by record labels who think that I'm, quote, a Christian artist.
Mm.
And it's those same labels who used to tell me that I wasn't Christian enough. Now they contact me and they think that my music is crossover.
Yeah.
And that's the way that I like to really write, is like, this should work for everybody.
Yeah.
And not be exclusive.
Yeah, I don't think God has a favorite home team. You know,
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think God is for all religions. So tell me, I'm sorry, Stefan. In 50 years from now, people are looking you up on Wikipedia. What's it going to say?
Oh wow! Intrinsically, I don't really care because I'm just trying to live right now. But I hope it says, you know, he's a good guy and he had a happy life and didn't hurt anybody. Aside from that, I'm really trying to just be present, not feel like I'm owed anything because I'm creative, or not be driven by something other than I'm really passionate about this work. This is really what feeds my soul. It's something that I tell New Thought artists who ask me all the time, where should I go perform? I say, go where you're fed.
Mm.
And then the joke is they say, oh, I went to this place. They didn't really have a lot of money, but I got so much out of it. And I said, no, I meant go where they actually feed you, like, so you don't have to buy food.
I'm sorry. I'm sitting here nodding my head and smiling very sagaciously. Like, yes, I know exactly what you mean. Go where you're spiritually fed. But no, you're talking to musicians. So you mean, dude, go where they're going to give you a free meal. Is that right?
No, that's the joke part of it.
Okay. I mean,
that's the other part of my spiritual practice, is it's perfectly okay to laugh every once in a while.
Yeah.
And no, I mean spiritually fed. Go where you're fed and the rest will follow. It's the same thing when I do a concert and people say, well, how much should we charge? I say, well, I don't really want to exclude people, so let people pay whatever they want.
Mm.
To which they reply, but you're worth this. And I say, well, I don't want people to be excluded who may really get something out of it. Mm. And let them decide what they can afford. And it just scares other artists because they think of lack and I just think of abundance and
getting your music and getting your message out there.
Absolutely. And I can work as hard as to or not as much as I want to, but the people who need to hear it will hear it or find it. And that's the beauty of the internet. I put my entire live concert on YouTube and it just keeps growing and growing and growing, and people share it and watch it, and it's making it very easy to get it out there.
Is your concert linked from your website?
It should be, but a simple search of my name on YouTube would bring all of it up. And a lot of pirated videos that, you know, folks have recorded on their iPhone that they put on YouTube. Those don't have the greatest audio quality, but...
Oh, no, but those are the best ones. Those are the bootleg ones.
The bootlegs, exactly.
Yeah, like in the 70s when we'd listen to bootleg recordings of the Stones and everything. So,
that's exactly
so
right.
If people go to YouTube and they want to hear either approved or bootleg versions of Stefan Mitchell, spell your name first and last for us, please.
Stefan Mitchell is S-T-E-F, as in Frank, A-N-M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L. And then also just add a .com, and that's my website.
Stephan Mitchell, StephanMitchell.com. Stephan, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for making the world a better place with your music.
It's been a pleasure, and same to you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
It brings the alchemy of love and life. I am drawn to the one who drew me. I'm called by the voice that knew me. Before the hand that holds me pulled me from the clay, I am painted in shades of wonder. I'm sculpted from light and thunder. This life.